American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
Well, good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the Internet for Tuesday, January 4th, 2005. I'd like to say a brief hello and a shout out to Pain Man. Now, Pain Man, I don't know if you've heard about Pain Man, me talking about Pain Man before or not, but he had a disease for about 5 years now called Crohn's, which is a really, really nasty disease. It's one of those silent diseases like lupus and all that kind of jazz where, you know, there's more money in the treatment than there is actually in the cure. Now, there's a lot of diseases out there in the medical world that are like that, cancer being one of them. Cancer research is a big, big money maker. And there's a lot of things that are going on with a lot of these so-called medicines that are actually winding up making us sick. Which is what we're going to start off the news today with, is saying no to drugs. Kids should not do drugs. And I firmly, firmly believe that. I mean, how much of the medication are we taking that's actually making us sick? From EurekaAlert.com, American Gastronomical Association, or Gastrological Association, one of those gas guys, the AGA, Journal of Clinical Gastrology and Hepatology, chronic users of non-steroid anti-inflammatory drugs, also called NSAIDs, have increased risk of bleeding and visible damage in their small intestine. Now, this is interesting because isn't non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, these are very, very common. Okay, these drugs are things that people would take for, you know, muscle pain, that sort of stuff. But long-term usage now apparently causes bleeding and visible damage to the small intestine, which, of course, is what you use when you, you know, eat, because that's what processes your food. Kind of an important part of the whole internal organ structure. We have always known that NSAIDs cause potentially deadly stomach complications, but the extent of the impact on the small intestine was largely unknown until now, said David Graham, MD, the lead study author. The introduction of video capsule endoscopy gave us an opportunity to examine the small intestine and learn that NSAIDs can cause severe damage to this organ. Well, isn't that handy? Considering every day more than 30 million people take over-the-counter and prescription NSAIDs for pain relief, headaches, and arthritis. But does anybody know about this? No! That's why we do the show Newsreel, so that I can tell you about this. So if you're taking NSAIDs currently, stop! And, you know, maybe, I don't know, try something else that might take away the pain, like, I don't know, something that's been tested for hundreds of years, like, say, weed. Currently, there's about 20 NSAIDs available by prescription only. Many, including ibuprofen, naproxen, aspirin, and ketapin, are available over-the-counter. So, these things you take over-the-counter, and, you know, incidentally, you know, Aspirin Bayer is the same company that made Cyclone B, the same gas that was used to kill, you know, millions of Jews. Yeah, that's the same company. Although NSAIDs and aspirin provide great benefit in terms of pain relief and cardioprotective effects, there is an increased risk of gastrointestinal complications ranging from stomach pain to ulcers. So yes, we'll get rid of your headache, but we're going to make you bleed out your ass. Moreover, these drugs are responsible for severe and potentially deadly gastrointestinal problems. Why isn't this in the news? Why don't we know about this? Each year, the side effects of long-term NSAID use cause nearly 103,000 hospitalizations and 16,500 deaths. More people die each year from NSAIDs-related complications than from AIDS and cervical cancer in the United States. But nobody knows about this. Why doesn't anyone know about this? But by all means, don't take my word for it. No. Don't just take my word for it. More information for consumers is available for the possible risk, even though the study just said there is a risk. You can learn more about how, you know, aspirin makes you bleed out your ass at www.toreduce.org. Okay, check that out. Now, all this information, we find this on Eureka Alert, but this is after the you know, remember Vioxx poisoning the nation with their so-called, you know, anti-painkiller, anti-arthritis? But now, you know, Wired magazine reported sort of on this, they mixed it in with another couple of little things. They're trying to make Vioxx seem not such a bad guy, so they kind of mixed it in somewhere on their website there, the true cost of Vioxx. And battle drug maker Merck, now, tell me there's a more Shadowrun name on the planet for a drug company than Merck. Maybe in for more problems, as a scientist reportedly is raising estimates from those who suffered ill effects from Vioxx. For those of you living under a rock, Vioxx was this anti-arthritis drug and painkiller drug that, you know, I know people at my work who take this drug, and now suddenly it does, bad things to you, because it's not really medicine, more so of a poison. Merck withdrew Vioxx from the market in the fall after it identified health risks in its own study of the drug. Now, you know the drug is bad for you when your own study is telling you it's going to kill people. The Financial Times reported that the Food and Drug Administration scientist David Graham, well, you can bet he's going to be out of a drug because God knows the FDA doesn't actually do anything. David Graham has vowed to publish research, vowed to publish it. He's vowed to publish that. Hey, Dave, why don't you just put that on the web and don't publish shit? Just, you know, release the information for free. Good plan, guy. That suggests up to 139,000 Americans died or have been seriously injured as a result of taking the drug / poison. If 139,000 people die when you take the pill, it's not medicine. This really isn't, you know, rocket science here, people. Obviously, Vioxx is toxic. Graham originally estimated in August that only 28,000 Americans had died or suffered debilitating heart attacks as a result from taking Vioxx. No, you kind of a little conservative there, Chief. 28,000 to 139,000. You forget to carry the one there? The revised version of the paper by Graham will likely fuel debate over the effectiveness of the U.S. drug regulatory system and may spur additional litigation against Vioxx maker Merck. Yeah. Now, you think maybe, you know, oh, I don't know, it seems like 5 or 6 times the amount of people are actually been suffering or dying from this drug. I would say it's a pretty safe bet that there's going to be more, you know, attention gathered to this particular sort of case. Now, when you look at medicine, there's a lot of good medicines out there. Well, yeah, there's a lot of good medicines out there. There's not a lot of good drugs out there, but there's a lot of good medicines. And now the drug industry is kind of getting a little bit scary now because, as we all know, they've got, you know, Prozac and Xanax and all these drugs that, you know, kind of numb reality a little bit. These drugs that are used to, you know, kind of make life a little bit easier so that, you know, you got your 19th nervous breakdown and you can go running for the shelter of your mother's little helper. And now, to make that more socially acceptable, there's this shitbag who is celebrated in the New Yorker. He makes everyone is turning into being a crazy. He's the guy who's coming up with, yeah, you know what? You know when you wake up in the morning and you want to have coffee? Well, that's actually a psychological condition. It's guys like this that are paving the path for pharmaceutical companies to work hand-in-hand with the terrorist paranoia. Robert Spitzer isn't widely known outside the field of mental health, but he is, without question, one of the most influential psychiatrists of the 20th century. Yeah, we're not going to say whether or not that influence is good or bad. It was Spitzer who took the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, the official listing of all mental diseases recognized by the American Psychiatric Association, the APA, and all mental diseases reorganized by the American Psychiatric... Oh, I repeated that. Shit. Oh, well. What do you do? And establish a scientific instrument of enormous power. But because insurance companies now require DSM diagnosis for reimbursement, the manual is mandatory for any mentally ill professional seeking compensation. So, let's just break that down. What that means is I wrote a book. Everything. This is the Dungeon Master's Guide for all the evil psychiatrists out there. If your condition isn't listed in this book, it's not real. It is also used by the court systems to help determine insanity. It's used by social services agencies, schools, prisons, governments, and occasionally as a plot device on The Sopranos. Isn't that friendly? This magnitude of cultural authority written by one guy to claim whether or not people are insane, however, it's a relatively recent phenomenon. Oh yeah, of course it is. And of course the drug companies love it because the more conditions there are, the more drugs they can sell to treat them. Although the DSM was first published in 1952, and the second edition, DSM-2, came out in 1968, early versions of the document were largely ignored. Spitzer began working on the third version, DSM-3, in 1974, when the manual was spiral-bound paperback of a mere 150 pages. I guess since 1974, everyone's gotten a shitload more crazy. It provided cursory description of about 100 mental disorders. It was sold primarily to large state mental institutions for $3.50. But now, oh yeah, under Spitzer's direction, which lasted through DSM-3 publishing to 1980, the DSM-3R for revision, published in 1987, both the girth of the DSM and its stature substantially increases. It is now 900 pages, defines close to 300 mental illnesses, and sells hundreds of thousands of copies at $83 a crack. But a mere description of physical evolution of the DSM does not fully capture what Spitzer was able to accomplish. In the course of defining more than 100 mental diseases, he's not only revolutionized the practice of psychiatry, but he's also given people all over the United States. Now, this is a good one. This is right from the New Yorker here. He is... Not only has he revolutionized the practice of not only has he only revolutionized the practice of head shrinking, but he's also given people all over the United States a new language in which to interpret their daily experiences and tame the anarchy of their emotional lives. Now, that is one of the scariest things I have seen in print in a long time. Don't get me wrong, mental health is important. It is important that we have, you know, the medical industry looking after people who are truly insane. But let's be certain we don't just medicate to death what it is to be creative and what it is to be alive. What if they medicated Van Gogh or Dali or Beethoven or Howard Hughes? I mean, the amount of people, when you look at the people who've accomplished amazing things in our world, in our society, they were usually a little bit off the wall, a little bit weird, a little bit out of the ordinary. And if we were to wind up drugging these people through the floor, we wouldn't have the amazing achievements of human history that we are able to look back on today. Now, in the Netherlands, where they're supposing to be liberal with their drug laws, that even the madness of the anti-terrorism and all this sort of thing is starting to leak in there too, because now they're testing the new mandatory ID system over there. Mandatory ID. You couple this with unified medical records and mandatory medication, and I ask you, what do you got? What do you got? What's left? If you're sitting there and everyone has to have their papers, please... Papers, please. And you kind of cross that with this huge database they're creating of people's medical records and mandatory medication. You'll see that not only, like, this one card will wind up being your very own ticket to the cattle cars. The Netherlands has introduced a new law making it compulsory to produce identity documents in a government bid to crack down on crime and boost security. Because, you know, the Netherlands are just out of control. Prime Minister Jan-Peter Balkenende's government secured parliamentary backing last year for the new ID law amid concerns about crime. We must keep everyone safe, public disorder, and potential attacks from activists opposed to the presence of Dutch troops in Iraq. They don't even try to hide that sucker. We've got this ID card out to stop activists, to stop protesters, to stop free speech. Concerns about crime have dominated Dutch politics since the rise of the anti-immigration populist Pim Fortuyn in 2002. The 911 attacks in the United States and last year's Madrid train bombings have added to the worries about security. Many European countries have already some form of identity card scheme, but the move has drawn fire from the critics in the Netherlands, a country renowned for its liberal attitude for prostitution, cannabis, euthanasia, and gay marriage. The law, which came into effect on Sunday, on Saturday, makes it mandatory for people from the age of what to produce an identity card. How old do they have to be? 14 years old. If you are over the age of 14, you have to produce an identity card when asked by police, or you are subject to immediate arrest and detention. That is some scary, scary shit. And you can bank that this is a test bed for the rest of the world. Oh yeah, it's a whole new ball game now. But why stop there? Why stop with, you know, the beauty that is the identity card? You know, because really, that's so last century. You know, really, I mean, having a license, why bother with that? And, you know, the whole concept of implanting chips, that gives people the option not to, you know, implant the chip. As a matter of fact, it will give them the option to run to the hills, which I'm quite certain a lot of us will do. But if you want to keep track of the sheeple, why use something as Luddite as paper is when you could use RFID tracking? Yes, yes. Retailers, what are they doing with the tracking and the RFID tags? This is just something that will not go away. Now, this is from the Financial Times of the 15th of December. While most people talk about RFID in supermarkets for the ways in which they can track inventory, both in the back of the store and on the shelves, it's important to realize the technology can be used for many other kinds of tracking as well. Now, this is from the Financial Times here, including supermarket employees and customer shopping carts. Supermarket employees and customer shopping carts. This is where the technology reaches a bit more into the gray area that makes some people nervous. I mean, why wouldn't you want your boss tracking you? I don't know, maybe because I didn't take my medication today? Supermarket turns RFID to improve efficiency. Netherlands-based Jumbo Supermarkets are using active RFID tags to keep tabs on its employees in an effort to better evaluate product revenue as it relates to handling efficiency. I'm sorry, tag number 3759 is not up to production. We will have him removed. The chain plans to step up its efforts by adding tags to shopping carts to track customers as they shop in order to better meet their needs. That's like, you know, making it so that we can log into the phones on, you know, like they did in, what country was that now? That would have been Hungary, where in Ceausescu used to be able to, like, actually listen into your phone line and you couldn't actually hang up your phone. He could just log in and so that he could better serve the people. That's the line he actually fed those people, okay, in Romania. It's absolutely out of control. Can you say microwave your clothing much? More in RFID news and why this crap is so scary. And this is yet another reason why you must master technology or be mastered by it. People listening to this broadcast right now, people listening to me, all the cyberpunks out there who are logging in and getting the download of the info here, we're not really the people we have to worry about. You have to worry about the little old lady in front of the bank machine who doesn't know how to deal with it. You have to worry about the people who are not able, because of either education or economic standings, they're not able to master technology. And because of that, they're going to be mastered by it. Tech Dirt talks about how effective January 1 at midnight, drivers on Illinois' toll roads who refuse to or unable to shell out $50 for an iPass are charged twice as much to use the same tollway systems. That's right, because you're not hooked in, because you're not with the new program of the iPass, you get to pay twice as much. I'm certain this has to be illegal. As those who will use the transponders pay their tolls, critics say the $1 charge to process scheme amounts to extortion. Northern California is pushing something similar to get more people to use what they call Fast Pass. I love this. Fast Pass. Easy Pay. You know, it's iPass. It's EuroPass. It's Scary Pass. Offering discounts to users. To be honest, it was a bit surprising that such systems weren't more popular out here when I moved from New York. This is where EasyPass system is ridiculously popular, to the point that its majority of toll booths on the major bridges and tunnels seem to be EasyPass only. It only makes some sense that tolls manned by humans would cost extra, as more costly for the government to pay the workers. Now, this is all from TechDirt. It's not that different from when some banks started charging people to speak with a human teller rather than an ATM. Of course, there are some questions about privacy when it comes to the RFID-enabling toll booth, but who gives a shit about privacy, eh? I mean, who really cares about it anymore? Do you care about privacy? Have you done anything about that? Have you taken steps towards your own privacy? I'm going to bank no. Even though you're listening, I bet you haven't actually done much. Do you have encryption on your computer? Be honest. Right now, how many of your files can you lock down? How many files do you have to mount the drive before you start accessing your data? Bet not that many. It's time to get a little bit serious about this. The one area where Illinois' rule is troublesome is that it requires a $50 down to get one of these devices. Yeah, that's right, which might be a bit of a steep on some limited incomes. Yeah, you think? Also, it's quite annoying that various electronic toll booth systems don't work all together. Some can work across multiple states with at least four different systems that don't appear to work together. So we don't have a standard yet. We're going to talk. Now, this is absolutely just exactly what I'm talking about when you say, you know, master technology and be mastered by it. And bear in mind, this is just the beginning. This is only where it starts. This is just, and people go, no, Sean, you're paranoid. You're a paranoid nut. Oh, you think I'm being paranoid? Yeah, absolutely. Me, I'm way out of control, except for some of the things that the CIA's been doing the last little while, as highlighted in the FAS.org and the memory blog, and according to the minutes of September 2021, 2004 meeting of the U.S. State Department Advisory Committee of Historic Diplomatic Documentation, David Greer commented that the practices of submitting an entire FRUS, whatever the hell that is, Foreign Relations Manuscript, the Foreign Relations Manuscripts, to the CIA has resulted in the reclassification of documents located at the National Archives, NARA. However, merely added these documents to a list of withdrawn items without indicating the documents have been declassified previously. That means that the CIA is taking documents out of the National Archives. Don McLuhan has noted that the Department of Energy cited Kyle Lott Amendment as justification for reclassifying previously declassified documents. Okay, well, that's a lot of little classifying, declassifying, extraction stuff to say that, no, we don't want people looking at this information, so we're just going to remove it. CIA reviewers, however, claim that the right to remove documents from the open files that, in their view, have never been properly declassified. How does something get properly declassified exactly? I don't really understand that. And furthermore, the Central Intelligence Agency and all this spy stuff, okay, it's not like these guys' hands were super tied before. As a matter of fact, you remember when the CIA was cool? Do you remember when everyone actually wanted to be spies? Does anyone remember that? Anyone remember when Tom Clancy, when Jack Ryan was a hero? Anyone cluing in on this? You know, and because of, they had a lot of freedom, I thought, you know? They're all like, oh, our hands were tied. I don't think they were. Operation Sun Devil went down without a problem. There's a lot of, the CIA has been running around and assassinating people all over the world for quite some time, and yet they still dropped the ball, 911, thanks so much, unless, of course, they didn't drop the ball on 911 and they were in on it, but that's a whole nother kettle of fish right there. They're saying, oh, yeah, now, you know, we our hands need to be untied. I don't think your hands were that tied, guys. I really don't think they were. I don't know what you're trying to get at. The CIA's screaming up and down the block that, you know, oh, our hands were tied, the FBI and all this kind of stuff. Well, now you got a budget that can't be beat. Now you got open carte blanche to do whatever. It's in the interest of national security. This is terrifying because, as anyone can tell you, if people are afraid, you can make them do anything. If people are afraid, you can make them do anything. That's why the whole concept of there is nothing to fear but fear itself. Everyone's going off about terrorism, but you know what happens when you talk to people in Palestine and these places that are victims of real terrorism? You know, they go to the pizzeria, they come home, and, you know, half the family's dead, that kind of a thing. Well, what they do over there is they conduct business as usual. They don't allow the terrorists to win. They don't allow themselves to live in a state of terror. They just kind of carry on. They live their lives day to day so that they can, you know, live a life rather than what seems to be happening in America, where everyone is absolutely terrified all the time. We're scared to take planes. We're scared to go anywhere we want. I'd be scared to take planes too, but I'm not afraid of terrorists. I'm afraid of being made to strip inside of stairwells, okay, and get videotaped for it, as highlighted by the NewsWithViews.com and Propaganda Matrix, according to November 24th, 2004 story from the WJLA, the Washington, D.C., and ABC television affiliate. Again and again, TSA employees at Reagan National Airport, including supervisors, told us that passengers were asked to remove their clothing and expose their private parts during security screenings, a clear violation of TSA's own internal guidelines obtained by the I-team. In fact, some so-called private screenings were allegedly conducted in a very public place, a stairwell accessible to other passengers and airport employees. TSA employees say after they complained, the screenings were moved to the manager's office. Yeah, I'll bet they were moved to the manager's office, where they allege unsuspecting passengers were either videotaped or monitored on closed-circuit television. Now, yeah, that's, I don't know, does that seem a little excessive to you? Does that seem a bit out of control to you? I think it does. I think it does. I think that's a bit much. I'm all for security, okay? But how quickly could this be abused? Think about that now. How quickly could this be abused? That's what people need to be looking at here. The whole point of having checks and balances in security is to prevent, you know, total draconian Gestapo stuff where, you know, an attractive woman is raped, that kind of a thing. And just wait, because those stories are going to start surfacing. Oh, you betcha. This kind of thing has happened time and time again in history. And, of course, we're not immune. You just wait for it, man. It's coming right down the pipe. Don't believe me? How about this one? This one here just makes me, oh my God. Oh my God, this makes me crazy. Okay, you have no idea how wacko I am about SUVs. Okay, these are vehicles which in no way should be allowed on the road. There's all kinds of information about why SUVs are in fact crap. They tip over. They're not safe. Everyone thinks an SUV, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't SUVs supposed to be that you buy them because you think they're safe? Or don't you buy an SUV? Aren't these, you know, the sheeple out there, you know, they load up their kids and they bundle them all up with their taser clothing so they don't get attacked by super predators and all this kind of jazz, and they drive them through the city, you know, providing they don't take a corner, because if they take a corner, the SUV is more likely to tip than any other vehicle on the road, you know, unless... And now, of course, we're not even going to talk about how they've taken a perfectly good Humvee and turned it into an SUV as a Hummer. We're not even going to approach that issue, because believe me, that makes me nuts. Yes. To bridge a gap, we all know that crimes start with fines, right? You have to have things. You get fined for the lesser crimes. If you drive the wrong car, for example, you start to get a fine now. What? As highlighted by MemoryMachineEgo.com, according to a December 7th article in the San Francisco Chronicle column, when he came out of the Contra Costa County Mayor's Conference, wow, there's a piece of alliteration, meeting in Walnut Creek a while back, Martinez City Councilman Bill Wainwright was surprised to see a ticket on his windshield. He was even more surprised when he saw what it was for. So what was Councilman Bill Wainwright ticketed for? Wait for it. Wainwright had been tagged for having too small a car. Seriously. The city parking lot where he had found a spot had two rows of slots reserved for vehicles 6 feet 5 inches or taller, according to a sign posted in the garage. Wainwright, with his Acura, was too short to park there. Now, if he'd happened to have himself a nice little SUV, which is really the only vehicles available right now, unless, of course, you happen to have some monster truck, and why would a law like that be in place? These are the kind of laws you have to watch. These are the kind of things you have to be careful of. It all starts as these little vibrations. Jello Biafra was talking about this stuff a while back. He was saying all this stuff was going to come to pass. And you have to watch the little vibrations. You have to keep your finger on the pulse. And that's where this is going to lead. What happens when you mix and match these ideas? Okay? How are we changing laws? We're starting to change our laws right now, but not for criminals. No. Because now, terrorists aren't criminals. You must remember that. Terrorism and terrorists are not criminals. Terrorists are terrorists. So we're starting to make individual punishments for terrorists. Aren't terrorists criminals? Isn't that what they are? Isn't a terrorist actually a description of a criminal? Or is a criminal now becoming a description of a terrorist? This is a very scary place to be. According to the Seattle Times, administration officials are preparing long-range plans for indefinitely imprisoning suspected terrorists who they do not want to set free or turn over to courts in the United States or other countries, according to intelligence, defense, and diplomatic officials. Now, this is applied to terrorists, which they've arrested in other countries. Now, bear in mind that a lot of these Al-Qaeda psychos are just kids who've been deeply programmed by their, you know, crazy cleric, you know, brainwashing leaders. All right? They grew up with this. They don't know anything else. I guarantee you me. You give me a suicide bomber for 3 weeks, and I can have that guy, you know, he's definitely going to be on board with what we got going on here. It's a question of education, not a question of imprisonment. Now, I believe that these people need to be, you know, you got to make sure that nobody gets blown up and we don't need any of that. But these people don't want to blow themselves up. They're not thinking clearly. Blowing yourself up with a bomb is an insane act. You don't have to have a doctorate to know that. Okay? But now we're starting to think, oh, these terrorists. No. They're not prisoners of war. We're not prisoners of war that we release after the war ends. Remember that? You know, when there was a war, war's over, we give the soldiers back. You know, that's how it works. Unless, of course, you're, you know, the American people and then you're in the war with Vietnam and then you don't pay Vietnam the money you owe them. So they say, screw you, hippie, and we're going to keep all your American prisoners. And then the American government turns its back on all its soldiers and leaves them to rot in these bamboo huts and they die and their families never have any, kind of resolution whatsoever. And the whole thing gets swept under the rug and nobody gives a shit because nobody talks about it anymore. The Pentagon and the CIA have asked the White House to decide on a more permanent approach for potentially lifetime detentions, including for hundreds of people now in military and CIA custody whom the government does not have enough evidence to charge in court. Now, hang on. You don't have evidence to charge them in court. Which in our court system, that's pretty weak, considering when you look at the Patriot Act 2 and stuff like that, anybody can get slapped with terrorism. So now we can throw you in jail forever, even if they are terrorists. I mean, that's just a propaganda term. These people are just soldiers for another country. Granted, they're the enemy. But after you thoroughly, pound the living shit out of the enemy's country, you generally give the enemy his soldiers back because, that's sort of what the whole, Geneva Convention and all that kind of thing was about. The outcome of the review, which also involves the State Department, would also affect those expected to be captured in the course of future counterterrorism operations. That's an important line. The outcome of the review, which is also involves the State Department would also affect those expected to be captured in the course of future counterterrorism operations. So, sorry, Sean Kennedy, you're a terrorist. We're going to put you in jail forever because you're a terrorist. Okay, have you looked at the definition of terrorism? Oh, wait, you can't find one. Because they're keeping it nice and gray, where it's a whim law. They can force anyone to be a terrorist now. Anybody can be, slapped into the terrorist cause, and now we're tabling laws to put them in jail forever? Gee, that's great. Why don't we just make it an oubliette, put a trapdoor in the ceiling, and call it a freaking day? We've been operating in the moment, because that's what's been required, said a senior administration official. Yeah, we don't think about the future, we operate in the moment, who said the current detention system has strained relations between the United States and other countries. The reason why it's strained relations is because you're imprisoning people without evidence and, you're totally going completely Gestapo stormtrooper here. That's what's straining the relations. Do you think that if you put these people in jail forever, that will not strain the relations? Give the head a shake. Okay, that's like, this is not even, you don't have to be Noam Chomsky to figure this shit out, okay? You can kind of look at this and go, wow, you people are fucking evil. Now we can take a breath. We have the ability to look at long-term solutions, and their long-term solution, of course, is to drop these people in a dark hole somewhere and walk away. No, that's not a solution. That is permanent prisoner of war imprisonment, and that's what they used to do in, Siberia. Why don't we just set up American gulags? New reality television, American gulag. What a fantastic idea. What, do they got a team of monkeys working around the clock on this thing? One proposal is the transfer of large numbers of Afghan, Saudi, and Yemeni detainees from the military's Guantanamo Bay, Cuba detention center into a new U.S.-built prisons. Oh, imagine that, because nobody builds prisons like the U.S., believe you me, in their home countries. So now, and you can bank. That it's going to be private corporations building those prisons. Oh, you betcha. Why just stop at oil? Why just stop at raping countries of oil and setting up contractors to take the oil out of the countries? Let's send contractors in there so that they can imprison their people too. Just like we do in the good old US of A. Bigger, better concentration camps for everyone. The prisons would be operated by those countries. So somehow that makes it okay. Yeah, I definitely want an American. How's that for a Nightmare on Elm Street? I want to be locked inside of an Afghani and Saudi or Yemeni
prison built by U.S. countries with that kind of know-how. Wow, I am in the ninth layer of suck. But the State Department, where this idea originated, would ask them to abide by recognized humanitarian rights and standards and would monitor compliance, senior administration officials said. Okay, wait a minute. If you ask them to abide and then monitor, that doesn't mean you ordered them. That means you asked them, which means that quite often the guys in the Saudi and Yemeni and Afghan can say, why don't you kiss my ass? The Afghan people, okay, do a little bit of research on the Afghan people. The Afghan people are probably some of the toughest bastards on the planet. Okay, these people live and eat rocks. Okay, they hate foreigners with a passion. Okay, because they've been invaded time after time. Nobody can take over these people. Nobody can take over the Afghan people. It's never been done. The Russians tried for years. It can't be done. So you think they're going to answer to a foreign, you know, diplomat about how they treat their prisoners? Guess again, Chavez, that's not going to come to pass. These people need to really give their heads a shake. Now, of course, in America and in Canada, we're a bunch of selfish pricks. North America is probably one of the most selfish cultures in the world. We're like the one quarter of the world's population that is using up, you know, three quarters of the world's resources. So who cares what they do in Afghanistan, Saudi, and Yemeni? Really, who cares? I mean, women have been going to Yemen, getting married in Yemen, and turning into slaves for, you know, as long as we can remember. Nobody cares. Nobody gives a crap about any of that kind of stuff. It doesn't really come down the pipe. Nobody even knows about it. None of this is getting reported in the news. Why don't you know about this? Yeah, sure, I'm a crazy guy on a radio station yelling about it, but none of what I'm saying is a lie. I didn't make this up. Why isn't Fox talking about it? Where's this on CNN? Where's the whole, you know, Mickey Mouse Disney Channel explaining how our rights are going right out the window? Now, bear in mind, this, you know, proposal, they're talking about Afghanistan, Saudi, and Yemeni detainees. What about, you know, protesters? What about the people who are protesters, American-born protesters? Not to mention, you know, any immigrants, which we've already, you know, we already know that they've got, you know, some of the most racist laws imaginable coming through with the Patriot Act, too. Never mind any of that. But, you know, if you happen to get picked up as a protester, it's just a flick of the wrist to turn you into a terrorist. And then because these laws apply, what was the line here? Yes, it would affect those expected to be captured in the course of future counterterrorism operations. How blanket is that? How blanket is that? What could not be called future counterterrorism operation? Homeland Security, the police, the stormtroopers, the whole prison planet concept. This is just way, way too easy. And you got to think that, don't worry about, when you sit back and you go, well, you know, who cares what they do in Afghanistan? Who cares what they do in Saudi? Who cares what they do in Yemen? Because they've been doing that crap for years. You should care, because it's starting to come home. The kind of dictatorships they have in those countries are now starting to come here, because suddenly everyone can get called a terrorist. This is a scary, scary notion. Don't think so? Think I'm making it up? Think I'm wrong? Oh, okay. How long before the leap is made between anti-social to anti-society and therefore terrorism? Well, it's already being done. Yes. Yes, it's already happening, according to CorporateWatch.org. This is the scariest story of the day. You ready for this one? In June, the first anti-social behavioral order case was brought against representatives of a corporation. Anti-social behavior order, or ASBO case. This is what the hell is that? This case was brought against representatives of a corporation. Well, so far I like the intro. The court hearing followed a Camden Borough Council investigation which identified two Sony executives responsible for commissioning illegal fly posting in the borough. I guess that would be flyer posting. The local authority is said to be investigating another 60 cases of corporate antisocial behavior, and other councils such as Manchester may follow their example. So corporations being antisocial? Interesting. ASBOs are designed to short-circuit the criminal justice process. They criminalize behavior that previously might only be dealt with civil or administrative remedy. Now, let's remember, we've got terrorism somewhere waiting in the wings to jump onto this boat, too. Insofar as this enables the criminalization of persistent or nuisance acts that are difficult to deal with under criminal law. So someone who would make a joke or the humor aspect of protesting now falls into this ASBO category, the antisocial behavioral order ASBO case brought against representatives of a corporation can just as easily, if they can bring it against them, you know, they can bring that against you and I. It goes on to say that in the UK, antisocial behavior legislation captures a theme that has dominated social movements against illegal pollution, toxic dumping, and health and safety crimes for many years. Of course, ASBOs have yet to be used for dealing with this type of corporate offending. So far, it is overwhelmingly young people and those that live in the poorest neighborhoods that have been targeted. So it's a good idea to use it against corporations, but of course, we're going to use it against innocent young people who are, you know, trying to become activists. Essentially, they've said everything but activism here. There is a clear evidence that now ASBOs are causing a rise in custodial sentences for young people. For reference, check out Young People Now magazine, 21 to 27 March 2004. The idea of corporate ASBO provides a more concrete example of how local communities might play a role in resetting the parameters of the crime control agenda. Okay? The Crime Disorder Act of 1998, in which ASBOs first appeared, proclaimed that crime control partnerships were to define the local crime and community safety problems as broadly as they wished. The Home Office guidance noted, nothing is ruled in and nothing is ruled out. What? Nothing is ruled in and nothing is ruled out. So let me get this straight. My broadcast here could be listed as an ASBO? Wow. This is the very definition of what vague is. What the hell is going on in England? The Home Office guidance noted, nothing is ruled in and nothing is ruled out. Can I get that on a t-shirt, please? And local crime and disorder audits, The real experience is that those audits and strategies remain dominated by highly conservative definitions of the crime problem. And no one has yet included the corporate offending, the Whitehall Act, and so on and so on. Idea of corporate ASBOs, however, provide more of a concrete example of how local communities might play a role in resetting the parameters of the crime control agenda. Well, that's great. That's great if that's going to happen against corporations. But you know what? It's not going to happen against corporations. It's going to wind up being used against protesters. You know, never mind, because antisocial is just, you know, can you get much more antisocial than terrorism? Really? I mean, can you do it? I don't know. Respondents in the U.S. National White-Collar Crime Survey consistently reported that they believe white-collar and corporate crimes to be more serious than street crimes. Well, obviously they are. Obviously. But does anyone know about this? No, of course not. No one reports on any of this because, you know, we got to have the infotainment news industry is just about distraction. Now we're going to be hearing about the tsunami in Southeast Asia forever. That's going to be in the news forever. They're going to be betting on death tolls. It's going to be through the roof. Now, don't get me wrong. I am personally connected to that. That is a horrible, horrible tragedy. But the world is still spinning, and as we notice, when things go horribly wrong, remember 911? Remember when that happened? Everybody remembers 911, because we can't forget it, because it's constantly thrown in our faces. Yet, what you don't think about in 911 is what happened while all the noise was going on with 9/11. It's disturbing. There's a lot of corporate crime which uses these natural disasters to hide their actions. It's a distraction. Now, obviously, the tsunami was absolutely hideous. We've got hundreds of thousands of dead happening over there. It's an absolute total crime that this has occurred. And I'm sorry, my heart bleeds. And if there's anything I could do to make it easier for the people affected by this, I would. However, you have to bear in mind that there are people who are going to try to profit from this. Okay? There are people who try to profit from the tragedy of innocent people. The Red Cross kept half of the 9/11 donation money they received after the attack. They are a globalist front at the top of a chain of any, and any donations to them are useless. So I would encourage people not to donate to the Red Cross. Do some research on it. Check it out. Smaller charities are a lot more trustworthy, okay? Half of the 911 donations went in. According to CNN, charities swung into action after September 11th terrorist attacks, raising more than a billion dollars. But questions are being raised now about where and how much of that money is being distributed. Bearing the brunt Tuesday during a hearing with the House Energy and Commerce Committee's oversight panel was outgoing Red Cross President Dr. Bernadine Healy. Is that a guy? Bernadine Healy? The Red Cross has raised more than $564 million for a Liberty Fund, which was set up in response to the attacks of World Trade Center and the Pentagon. Yeah, the Pentagon attack. Don't get me started. While the agency states on its website that it's spending more than any other relief agency responding to the terrorist attacks, it has distributed only $154 million. We have a bit of a problem here. Healy was hammered by one New York official for the Red Cross' decision to put aside nearly half of the money raised for future needs that may include terrorist attacks. I see the Red Cross, which has raised hundreds of millions of dollars that was intended by the donating public to be used for the victims of September 11th, I see those funds being sequestered into long-term plans for an organization, testified New York Attorney General Elliot Spitzer. Healy told CNN the Red Cross was a service organization and that previous donations had prepared the agency to deal with September 11th. We had planned for a weapon of mass destruction attack, she said. There we are. We knew our obligations under the Congressional Charter. We knew it involved victim assistance and shelter. We knew that it involved dealings with rescue workers. We knew it involved blood. Well, that's great. But, I mean, can't you just, like, streamline that a little bit? Can't we get some PayPal going on here? That's what I'm talking about. Whenever there's a massive tragedy, this tsunami, just watch. It's going to be front page forever. Everyone is going to lock onto this. It's great. There's kids crying. There's mothers crying. Next time you watch the news, okay, this just makes me insane. Whenever I see people suffering and like, raw suffering used to for ratings, it makes me crazy. I slapped on the news the other day, okay, and they've got a picture of a woman who's found a photograph in a morgue because the morgues over there now are just putting up photos of the dead. Okay, and they have like this picture of this bloated child's corpse that this woman recognizes as her daughter, no doubt by, you know, scraps of clothing or whatever. And this woman, of course, comes unglued. Okay, she's completely freaking out because, you know, her six-year-old child is dead. For those of you listening, okay, for those of you listening who have children, try to imagine the horror of hunting for your child after an event like this. And then when you finally find a photograph of your bloated, rotting child stapled loosely to a board, yeah, you're going to come unglued, but the last thing in the world you're going to want is to be filmed. To be filmed turning to shit as you realize that your entire world, everything you live for, is gone. Now, I am a bit of a film freak. I have, you know, Sumerian following me around with a camera just about everywhere I go. But even there's times with me where I don't want to be filmed. But no. If it bleeds, it leads. And mothers crying over the deaths of the children are great for ratings. This event is being exploited. It's going to be exploited by the Red Cross. It's going to be exploited by other organizations. And it's going to be exploited by the government as a distraction. Yes, it's horrible. Yes, you should do what you can to help people. Make sure you check some of the organizations you donate money to. And for God's sakes, don't be suckered in by some clown showing up at your front door with his hand out, okay? Because no charity worth its salt does that. There's lots of people who are scumbags of the earth who will wander around trying to capitalize on other people's suffering. It's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. But more disgusting is this, is the media's focus on this event. Not because they care. They focus on the event because they know it's going to be a distraction and no one can possibly sue any of the networks. None of the large political corporations are going to be able to get angry at them because they're talking about the suffering of people in another land. So yeah, sure, let's get everyone to focus on that and we're not going to watch what's going on at home. Yes. Don't think for a moment that I don't think we should help those people. Don't think for a moment that I'm trying to downplay that tragedy that's over there. I'm not gifted verbally to convey to you my feelings of tragedy for what's going on over there. But it is up to us to make sure we maintain vigilance on what's going on around us in our own country. We have to make sure that anytime there's a massive, massive event like this, we have to go, whoa, wait a minute, hunker down. What is going on? What's going to be happening all around us? Don't focus your attention on one thing. People are trying to focus our attention on this one specific event. Watch the news wires. Watch to see, is the Patriot Act 2 going to get ramrodded through? How many other little bills are going to get tacked on here and nobody can hear it because they can hear the screams and cries of Southeast Asia because they're being broadcast through all the speakers? This is something that is not by accident. This is not something that's done by mistake. This is done on purpose to keep us out of the loop. That's why we do Newsreel. That's why I'm up here screaming my lungs out at you, trying to get information across so that you can stay alive for just a little bit longer, so that the voice of freedom can stay out there, so we can distribute information, so that knowledge can stay free. This is what we need to do. Okay? You need to get this going. Now, I got a bit of good news. Yes, that's true. I have a bit of good news in that there's been a new tool invented by Philips, all right, to help us distribute information. Okay, because, you know, that's only going to be in electronics news, but check this out. Philips Electronics unveiled an optical disc drive on Monday for the use in computers that can burn and play CDs, DVDs in three formats, including the new Blu-ray standard. Okay, that's hot. The drive, to be presented at the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas this week, to be available in the second half of 2005, comes as an electronics giants, as all the electronic giants jockey for support in their new DVD systems. Many film studios had expected that Blu-ray would not hit the market till 2006. The Dutch company, together with a group of other powerful electronics makers, including Sony, Corp, Hewlett-Packard, and Dell. Dell, one of my favorite people. Did you know that Dell used prison labor to make computers? They set up, you know, having, you've got a concentration camp of forced labor to make computers. This is why Dell is evil. It's proposing that Blu-ray format, which can store up to 50 gigs of data on a disc. So, 50 gigs on one disc from, I mean, the Blu-ray standard sounds like a good idea. If it's used, if it's utilized, and if the right people utilize, it is up to us. It is up to the people of the internet. It is up to the cyberpunk generation to be able to distribute this information around. And if we can get 50 gigs on a disk, we could have entire libraries on there. We never before in history has information been so easily available to everyone. Yet it's not. We're not trying to free it. Everyone's trying to lock it down. It sounds a little bit scary to me. This level of storage allows film publishers to put a full-length movie in high-definition format on one disc. Now, this is something very, very useful for all of us. That's why I want people to rip these shows. That's why I want people to get out there and to do these things, to get involved, to do what you can. If you can't do a radio show, that's fine. I'm doing one myself. Don't worry about it. Do some art. Make expression. Talk about these things. Introduce people to Newsreel. Let's get this going. We have to build momentum so that people understand the threat which is upon us. And you know what? Just because you're upset, it doesn't mean you're crazy. Everyone is saying that now, you know, well, wow, I'm really depressed all the time. That's okay. Take some pills. What happened to say no to drugs? What happened to say no? No, say no to drugs that aren't, you know, sold by Monsanto. That's what it is. You know, no one wants to do drugs. People just want to do the drugs given to you by your boss or supervisor. That's the plan. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable that it seems like everyone's common sense and reality is just, you know, going straight down the tubes. The child is on fire and nobody can see it. And everyone's like, oh, well, I guess that's just the way it is. No, that is not the way it is. I encourage everyone, do not go so gently into that good night. Yes, it's scary. Yes, you want to hide under the bed, but we can't. Now more than ever, it is more important than any other time in history that we stand up and go, no, this is wrong. And we need more people to be able to stand up and do just that, to scream at the top of their lungs, we are not going to take this anymore. That's all I got for you today, but don't worry, I'll be back tomorrow to make sure you get the information you need to stay alive. This is a free broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of Adam, Keith, Malcolm, Peter, Michael. You'll notice I'm not reading out their last names. Yeah, because kind of funny. I read out everyone, talk about Patriot Act 2, and then I read everyone's names. So the following people are going to jail. Adam, Keith, Malcolm, Peter, Michael, T. Oh, Timor. Let's do that one. Timor, Aaron, Greg, SB, Richard, Weblife, Matt, Azure, Evan, Drake, Brian, Ashton, David, Austin, Jonathan, Adam, Jonathan, Trevor, my car, Mark, Art, Matthew, Kyle, Justin, and Matthew. Yes, thank you so much for your generous donations to keep us on the air. If you would like to help keep this daily broadcast on the air, please visit rantmedia.ca. Special thanks to reporters Transix, Sylvanus, Jinjin Machina, and Wagawar for their assistance in gathering data. And if you have access to sensitive information or any pertinent stories, please email them to Newsreel, that's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up the new album from Psytrop to help you escape the Matrix. Until tomorrow, that's what server said. End of line.
We interrupt this program with a special bulletin. America is now under martial law. All constitutional rights have been suspended. Stay in your home. Do not attempt to contact loved ones, insurance agents, or attorney. Shut up. Do not attempt to think or depression may occur. Stay in your home. Curfew is at 7 p.m. sharp after work. Anyone caught outside the gates of their subdivision sectors after curfew will be shot. Remain calm. Do not panic. Your neighborhood watch officer will be by to collect urine samples in the morning. Anyone caught interfering with the collection of urine samples will be shot. Stay in your home. Remain calm. The number one enemy of progress is questions. National security is more important than individual will. All sports broadcasts will proceed as normal. No more than two people may gather anywhere without permission. Use only the drugs prescribed by your boss or supervisor. Shut up! Be happy! Obey all orders without question. The comfort you've demanded is now mandatory. Be happy. At last, everything is done for you.